Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hello.
Oh, hi. How are you feeling today?
I am a tired man.
Me too. Are you not feeling very super?
I am not feeling particularly super.
I noticed, before we turn our cameras off, there's always just a little, say, for the listeners, we record ourselves while having a chat on Google Meet, but we usually turn our cameras off to help with the bandwidth and such, but I can see that we're both wearing, like, thick knitwear. It's that kind of day.
It's a thick knitwear kind of day.
Knitwear boys.
That's our official name. Of course, underneath this knitwear, I've got my superhero costume to go off and save the world.
Yeah, that's the way. So no, we're not feeling super today. Not feeling it.
No. But did you feel super watching my super ex-girlfriend?
I don't know. There's some good, some bad, isn't there? There's things to like about this film, and then there's some bits that have aged poorly. Let's dive right in. My super ex-girlfriend.
I
liked her a lot. She was great.
Yes, but, that's exactly what I was going to say. Uma Thurman, I enjoyed in this movie.
Yeah, right? It's a really, really good performance from her. An actor who I think is maybe actually very well known for stuff that is silly, like Kill Bill, but is actually probably underappreciated for her other work. Did you say that's fair?
Yeah, I think she's generally known for she's known for those Tarantino movies, isn't she, really?
Yeah,
and that's what people focus on, the Kill Bills, Killian William Pulp Fictions as well, of course.
Oh yes, the Pulp Fictions.
But personally, I like her best in Gattaca. Or rather, Gattaca is my favourite movie that she's been in.
That's a great film. I haven't seen that in a really long time.
Is it on anything? Because if it's on anything, should we do it next?
I think we should. Because you know who else is in it?
Our boy Ethan Hawke, our boy Jude Law.
Yeah, but also Greg Sestero is in it.
Are you kidding me? Is he in it?
Doesn't he have like a really small role in it?
Does he?
I feel like there was some... When I read the book of The Disaster Artist, I feel like it was mentioned.
Amazing.
I might be thinking of a different film. I'm going to check.
I'll keep an eye out for him.
No, he's right. Greg Sestero is Gattacan citizen.
That's so
I
good.
I was right.
Did you notice in My Super Ex-Girlfriend the best cameo of them all, though?
No, who's that?
Maureen Ponderosa.
No way!
Is in it. Yeah. Catherine Reitman is the TV reporter when they're at the restaurant doing the double date.
Oh, you know, I thought I recognised her.
Yeah, so Maureen Ponderosa.
It's been a while since I've watched any Always Sunny, actually. Need to get back on that.
We are rewatching it right now.
Where are you up to?
Going all the way through. We're quite late in. I think we're series 11, I think.
Oh, good work.
We've been watching it all the way through.
See, I'm going to have less time now because baseball started up again. It's only spring training, but you can watch baseball games now. So,
although you do know why Maureen Ponderosa was in... My super ex-girlfriend.
No, why? Is this a joke?
No.
Is this a bit? Are you doing a bit? I'm not ready for a bit yet. We're only like 5 minutes in.
Because she's the daughter of Ivan Reitman.
Yes, no, I did know that. And I didn't know until I started watching this and was looking at things that it was directed by Ivan Reitman.
No. It's not one of the things that he's most renowned for. As opposed to... Do you like the work of Ivan Reitman?
Yeah, absolutely. He's the man. Ghostbusters, obviously. Kindergarten Cop.
Yeah, Kindergarten Cop Junior.
Yeah.
We should talk about Evolution sometime as well.
Oh, man, that is a ridiculous film. Absolutely ludicrous film with a great cast that I feel like I haven't seen for a long time. And again, like, might have aged really poorly, but I think at the time I thought it was the funniest shit I'd ever seen.
And also, you know, he also produced, what's it, didn't he? Beethoven, your favourite movie.
That's right. I was going to say, in my head, I always think that he directed Beethoven, and he didn't, but he did produce it.
He produced it, yeah.
It was directed by Brian Levant and written by John Hughes under a pseudonym.
Yeah, the best thing that John Hughes ever did. The minimal amount of racism and sexism in a John Hughes movie.
To this day, I remain baffled by why you wouldn't want to lend your name to such an incredible film.
I mean, genuinely, I'd rather watch Beethoven than any other John Hughes movie. I love Beethoven. Not as much as you.
No.
Don't get me wrong. You are the number one Beethoven fan.
You're probably right. Uncle Buck, Ferris Bueller's Day Off. You'd rather watch Beethoven than either of those.
Absolutely. Like, Uncle Buck is maybe nearly there, but does it have a giant big dog that pulls over a table of nasty yuppies?
Depends on your opinion of John Candy, I suppose.
Oh, he's a big dog in Spaceballs.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah. anyway, yeah, this is an Ivan Reitman movie. One of the lesser known ones, I'd say, in terms of when you think about his filmography.
Yeah. Oh, he produced on Animal House as well.
Yes.
And oh, yeah. Space Jam. We might have to end this episode right here.
But at least it wasn't Space Jam 2.
No, which is a crime. Genuinely a crime. Yeah. Oh, no, he was involved. Executive producer only. Okay,
that's all right. That means nothing.
Yeah. Oh, no, hang on. He's executive producer on Beethoven, not actual producer. But I'd like to imagine that he had some hand in it. He was heavily involved. Because it feels like one of his films, doesn't it? It feels like it shares a lot of sensibility with Ghostbusters.
Yes. Yeah.
But yeah, his exec producer credits, Beethoven second, obviously.
Eurotrip.
I was about to say that as well. So, and also 2009's Hotel for Dogs. My neighbor's dog started barking the second I said that.
It wants to go to a hotel.
I'm in the conservatory, so you might get some dog barking tonight.
Wait, hold on. Beethoven Oh, it's an animated show. They made an animated Beethoven show in the 90s.
Oh, no. I have no idea about this. No.
Oh, my God. Dean Jones voiced the dad.
What?
So rather than playing the villain, he then voiced George.
That's crazy.
But the actress who played Rice returned for the animated show.
Tress McNeil was involved in this? The voice of Gadget from Chippendale's Rescue Rangers?
Was also the voice of Ginger the Collie.
Wow.
Did we have a talking... I assume that we had a talking dog then.
Additional voices. Hank Azaria as Killer the Poodle. How did I not know about this?
This is incredible. And you look at the picture of it and it says Beethoven and Ivan Reitman presentation.
Presentation.
His name was all over.
What does that mean?
We need to find, this must be on something like Internet Archive.
Yeah.
I need to watch it to view the full glory of the Beethoven.
Yeah.
When I search Beethoven on the internet, I do not mean the cuck composer. I mean the dog.
Not only potentially like the greatest composer of all time.
I mean the dog. I don't mean this frilly-haired loser. Look at me. I'm Beethoven. I make music.
Get off my screen. Shut
the fuck up.
I'm going to set that to that, obviously.
Yeah, I want to watch the Beethoven and oh my God, it looks absolutely horrendous.
I know, I'm looking at it now.
You know those that when they had the outsourced episodes of The Simpsons and they had to redo them.
Yeah.
Like what was going to be like the pilot episodes of the full length Simpsons series, and then the animation was so bad that they had to redo them. It looks like that, like all the angles are wrong.
Yeah,
all the colors are off.
Weird long necks. It looks like something that someone who was working on the Jetsons was working on the side and not doing a good job of.
Whilst drunk.
Yeah.
It looks really weird. Like all of the angles are off. It's like it's from a dog's point of view. Maybe that's what they were going for.
Maybe that's what they were going for. Maybe that's why it didn't do well. But maybe if you talk to any dog who came of age in 1994, who would obviously now be dead.
Transformative experience.
They'd say this was their favourite TV show. It's like how they made those adverts for dogs.
Exactly, but the full-length animated show for dogs. I'm still going to find it, and I'm going to watch an episode, and it's probably going to give me motion sickness or something.
Yeah.
Anyway, how did we get on? Oh, Ivan Reitman. Yeah, this isn't his greatest work. It's maybe not his worst.
No, I don't think it's by any means his worst. Not that we're now going to comb through his filmography to find something that's worse than Space Jam has already been mentioned.
Exactly. But even as director, he's got some less good stuff in here. I'm sure that No Strings Attached is worse.
Yeah, we talked about that. Girlfriend. We mentioned that in passing last week, didn't we?
Yeah.
Because we were talking about Ashton Kutcher, who is very irritating.
Yes, exactly. So yeah, I'm sure that this is not the worst thing. But it's a middle of the road rom-com. I think I saw this at the cinema as one of those moments where me and my friends went to the cinema, didn't see what was going on ahead of time, and just chose the thing that was on nearest.
Yeah, it's definitely got that kind of mid-2000s content churn vibe, hasn't it?
Yeah, there's bits and pieces that felt really familiar to me, so I'm fairly certain I did see this. And it's fine. It's a fine film.
It's all right. Budget, 30 million. Box office, 60 million. That's a flop by 2006 standards.
Yeah, by 2006 standards, that's not very good. And whereas What Happens in Vegas had like 180,000 views on IMDb and ratings, this has a paltry 67,000 on IMDb.
That's clearly still quite a lot.
But for mid-2000s rom-coms, it's low on it. Where do you think this movie failed to make an impact then? Why did the awful audiences of rom-coms in the mid-2000s not fall in love with My Super Ex-Girlfriend?
I don't know. I think the bit that irritated me the most was was Rainn Wilson in this. And I like Rainn
yes.
Wilson. Like, yeah. I think he is brilliant in The Office. Like, I think he's actually done some really cool stuff, including Super, which is a very different film to this. Which,
very good movie, very
have
different.
Have we talked about that on this? I watched it with you. I definitely have a memory of watching that with
you. I really like Super. I don't know if we've talked about it. That's another thing we should talk about at some point.
Yeah. But he kind of really soured this film by doing the same thing he does in most films. And like, even though I think he is actually more versatile than he's given credit for, in this film, his kind of demeanor is very like his character in The Office, and it's hard not to see that. And I know that's a bit wrong, but also it's not that so much as what he does and says, which is like he's doing the whole misogynist bro thing, which is irritating. And then Luke Wilson like pretends to be disgusted by it, but in a very half-hearted way that makes you think the film is trying to have it both ways. It's trying to be like, oh, ha-ha, like misogynist bro humor. Oh, but that's not what we really think. Because our main character's a nice guy who looks a bit like Justin Trudeau.
See, I see it slightly differently. So I think Rainn Wilson was wasted in this movie because they didn't use him effectively with a character which isn't his standard thing, which is the misogynist bro, whereas he's often like the revolting person, but he's often revolting in the sort of outsider fringe way.
Yeah. And it didn't work for him not to be like that, did it? Not that I'm saying he should be like that in every role, because he's actually a talented actor who's very versatile. Yeah. But again, it didn't work because he was coming off with all this bro stuff, but he was also then being unsuccessful with the ladies.
Did you listen to the podcast that he voiced?
No, what was that?
So it was people sending in like creepy encounters they had with people in their lives, and then he was playing like a haunted movie store owner who sort of worked as like the crypt keeper in between the different bits of the episodes. I can't remember what the podcast was called now, but it was really good. He was the he was like the sort of the compare, I suppose, of the podcast. It was very good fun podcast. He was perfect for that. But he does have a lot better range than people give him credit for.
Yeah.
As shown in such movies as The Meg. Is it The Meg that he's in?
Yeah, he's in The Meg.
Yeah.
That's a shit piece, isn't it? The Meg.
I mean, it's not as shit piecey as it should be. That's my complaint about it.
Yeah.
It doesn't go far enough.
I saw half of it on TV once.
Yeah, I wish it was sillier. It's not as silly as it should be. Therefore, it fails. It needs to be nonsense. Like, it's not as much nonsense as Deep Blue Sea, which is the pinnacle of nonsense shark movie. And it needed to be more than that.
That's the problem with My Super Ex-Girlfriend, actually. Not enough shark. For the one scene where a bad CGI shark gets thrown through a window. Yeah, they could have done more. I wouldn't know the shark's backstory.
More shark content.
Yeah.
More shark content. Whilst we're on Rainn Wilson, one thing I will say is if you haven't watched Shimmer Lake, that's a film that's very good at breaking down the Rainn Wilson stereotypes.
I have not.
Which is like a sort of dark comedy crime movie where it's like reversing through a week.
Okay.
It's very cool. Very cool film. I recommend. I think it was made for Netflix, actually. Where he's kind of Rainn Wilson-y, but it's in a very different context where it's almost sort of, I guess, Fargo-esque in its approach. So yeah, that's a very good, if you like Rainn Wilson, go watch that. Expect a great Rainn Wilson performance from My Super Ex-Girlfriend, because unfortunately he is wasted in this movie. And you're completely right about the movie trying to have its cake and eat it with Luke Wilson, who I think is more so, he's actually more of a misogynist creep than Rainn Wilson's character, because with Rainn Wilson's character, it's actually all an act, as revealed in a post-credit sequence.
Oh, I didn't see the post-credit sequence. What did I miss?
He has sex with the character known as Shapely Bartender.
Oh, okay.
And then admits that actually he's not had sex in a long time.
Right, okay.
So actually it's all a front for him, whereas with Luke Wilson, he's pretending to be a nice guy, but in fact he is a very nasty man who is ogling over women,
yeah,
and treating women unfairly and manipulating them and pretending to be more interested in them than he is to have sex with them.
Yeah, so really the main problem with this film was Luke Wilson. Like, I didn't really like him or his character at all.
Yeah.
And all the other stuff was actually kind of fine, but yeah, he was irritating.
And this movie could have been so much better if they genuinely had a super sympathetic male lead.
Yeah.
But instead they went for the dickhead. And I don't know whether that's just to do with the attitudes of the time, or whether that is just the creative decision they took. But imagine if this had been like a genuinely super sympathetic person. I think you would have felt a lot more for him through the ex-girlfriend element of the movie, rather than wanting him to be eaten by a shark.
Yeah. When the shark came through, I was like, yeah, come on,
you
eat him.
Bite his dick.
Eat him. Yeah, the best moment of the film was when she wrote the word dick on his forehead and he sort of looked in the mirror and went, dick? I was like, yeah, you are one.
Yes. Because instead, like, this whole thing sets itself up as, I've got a crazy ex-girlfriend, but she's a superhero.
Yeah.
And it's like, well...
Which is a tired trope, and I expected it to be worse based on that, if that makes sense.
And the thing is that he kind of deserves everything he gets. That's the thing, is he is an asshole.
Yeah.
So you are on the side of Uma Thurman, and I think there's a way that you could have made this movie where actually you enjoyed both characters and you saw the positives and negatives of both characters.
Yeah.
Instead of just Luke Wilson being a chode and Uma Thurman being generally all right, if a bit weird. It's not great. Not great from that perspective, but there are enough scenes in this movie that make it enjoyable.
What's good about it is that it doesn't take itself too seriously, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And it doesn't really have, and I think one thing that I really liked about it, it doesn't have any of those serious, heartfelt moments, unlike what happens in Vegas that tries to do that a couple of times and is just a bit wretch-worthy. This movie does have... instead just that light-hearted tone throughout, and I think it works in its favor that it never tries to set up that actually he really loves Uma Thurman or Uma Thurman really loves him, or that Anna Faris and Luke Wilson are genuinely in love, as much as they say that they love each other. It doesn't really, it's not to do with having that emotional connection, it's just to further the plot.
Yeah, and that's a trap that romantic comedies often fall into, and it's the thing that if you can do that and do the comedy that really makes you laugh, that is gold dust, isn't it? And yes. There are very few films that get that right. So obviously in the case of this, it decided not to try, and it's actually all the better for it. Than to have, yeah, there was no emotional dad speech. There's a tiny like emotional moment where he just like brought Eddie Izzard into the room and was like, "You love him, don't you?" Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Which felt a bit out of place, but they needed to tie everything up, I suppose.
Yeah. They needed to give Eddie Izzard a few more scenes.
Basically, Eddie Izzard is what would happen if Ducky in Pretty in Pink turned into a supervillain.
Yeah.
That's basically his character, where he's the nice guy best friend who actually secretly is a predatory asshole, and then gets faced by the girl that he fancies. She becomes a superhero and he decides to become a supervillain.
Yeah.
And that's his character, which is actually quite a fun character arc. It's almost a precursor to... Did you ever watch Chronicle?
No. What's that?
Chronicle is a fun, interesting found footage movie that is about superheroes, basically. So these three high school kids, they find a crashed meteorite, like my super ex-girlfriend, the prototype for Chronicle. I think they find a crashed meteorite or something, and it gives them superpowers. And it's Michael B. Jordan and Dane DeHaan, and I forgot.
Okay, I'm listening. That's a good cast.
And basically, the sort of twist is that Dane DeHaan is like a troubled, bullied kid at the school, and the other two keep him in check, and they sort of go on things together. But one of them, like, dies, I think, and then he starts using these powers for evil instead. And so he starts getting his own back on the kids who bullied him, and then it just keeps getting worse and worse, and he starts going down this dark path. And it's a really interesting movie that didn't have to be found footage in its approach, to be honest. That's just a gimmick at this point. But the sort of plot and everything is quite clever.
Oh, that sounds directed, really good.
Yeah, directed by Joss Trank, who went on to make the terrible Fantastic Four movie that everybody hated a few years later.
Right.
Then directed the Al Capone movie with Tom Hardy as Al Capone, if you remember when that came out.
Yeah.
Tom Hardy in rubbish makeup, looking all silly.
As you know, I'm generally very, very skeptical of found footage films. I don't think I've seen one that I've really loved, but that sounds like it could be the one that could change my mind.
Yeah, it would have been better if it wasn't found footage, but there are a few moments where it works quite well from a found footage perspective. And it's an interesting film. I do recommend it, particularly if you are incredibly sick and tired of superhero stuff like I am.
Yeah.
It would have been even more refreshing if it came out right at the peak of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, where it was just eating its own tail.
Yeah.
It would have been a perfect movie to come out then, but it is a very smart little film.
Sounds good.
But yeah, and my super ex-girlfriend kind of does that. The supervillain is the pissed off, spurned best friend who wanted to be boyfriend.
Yeah, and you get a tedious flashback explaining all of that.
Yeah.
Sort of ticking all the superhero boxes. But at the same time, I think if it tried to give you anything more than surface level superhero stuff, it would have really distracted from all the silliness and wouldn't have worked, would it?
Yeah, it didn't. This movie didn't want to go deep into the superhero stuff. I think that was all very good. A good choice to just be like, you know what? We're just going to do the rom-com stuff with the odd bit of superhero stuff thrown in, just to mix it up a bit. So you get things like that she's superpowered and she has sex and she's very strong.
Yeah.
And they do that joke three times. And it gets increasingly less funny each time.
Less funny, but more elaborate as they have like a flying sex scene, which is kind of hilarious, but also kind of terrible.
Yeah, it's very silly. There's bits and bobs of that where basically she accidentally uses her powers when she doesn't mean to, and that happens a few times here and there. They reuse that same central gimmick quite a few times, but at least they do it in vaguely interesting ways each time. So they often don't repeat her using her powers either accidentally or maliciously. So she'll use her super speed to make him naked in the middle of a meeting, or write dick on his forehead and make him need to wear a hat.
Yeah.
Or throw a shark through a window, or take his car up into space. All of that kind of stuff isn't... They use a different superhero gimmick each time.
Yeah, and you feel like they probably started with those gags and then built the rest of the film around it.
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing I sort of did note about this film is that the first half where they're going out isn't as enjoyable. And I think it becomes more fun when she is the Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. But equally, I don't know whether if they added more of the Crazy Ex-Girlfriend stuff in, that it would have become too tiresome too quickly.
Yeah, it would have felt a bit more tropey and a bit more cliched, I think. So that's a tricky balance. And I actually appreciated that it didn't do that and it jumped straight to the shark.
Yeah.
It didn't jump the shark. It jumped to the shark.
Yes. So I think they hit the sweet spot there, but the rest of the movie falters because of different flaws. Mainly that Luke Wilson is deeply dislikable in this film.
Yeah, and just really sort of fawning and irritating. And it tries to make you think that him and his coworker are in love by like having multiple skits about like HR policy violations. Which is very silly. With the manager played by Wanda Sykes, who is also very much wasted in this film.
Yeah. Wanda Sykes is just, should have so much better material than she has.
Yeah.
It's disappointing. Disappointing use of people here and there. But it's still fun, I think.
Yeah.
I didn't regret watching this movie, which is not what I always say about films that we watch on this podcast.
No.
Question for you. Which of the weird little men do you prefer? Do you prefer Luke Wilson or Jason Schwartzman?
Oh, definitely could Jason
be,
Schwartzman.
Could be brothers. Which one do you prefer?
Yeah, no contest. Jason Schwartzman's great.
Yeah, I agree. I'm in the Schwartz camp.
I think Luke Wilson's been in some okay films, hasn't he? But Jason Schwartzman, he's like a god. He's in every Wes Anderson film, obviously. That's the law. He's in Scott Pilgrim.
That's true. He is in Scott Pilgrim. Whereas Luke Wilson's only in The Occasional.
I still haven't finished the new Scott Pilgrim series. Have you watched any of it?
No, I've not watched it.
It's really good. I'm really enjoying it. There's an incredible... The opening to one of the episodes uses United States of Whatever by Liam Lynch, and it's given that song like a bit of a renaissance. I don't know if you've seen any like memes around that, but...
No, I do remember that Liam Lynch song, though, from back in the day.
I know. It really made me kind of revisit that song in kind of a very fun and nostalgic way. But it does... minor spoiler, but it's, Lucas Lee, the like skater boy played by Chris Evans. It's just like a really long sequence of him skating through Hollywood to that song. But it's one of the best like animated things I've seen in years, and it works so well for that character and that vibe, and it's just the perfect choice of song.
Okay. I will have to watch it. I'm not a particularly big fan of the movie Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Did you read the
as
comics?
As well, you know. Yeah, the comics I got on with more. I didn't like the movie that much. Partly I found the direction frustrating, partly I found the casting not particularly good. I didn't think Michael Cera was right for it. And I don't think it quite got the message of Scott Pilgrim as well as it should have.
Yeah. Which is what people always say about it. And this new series is kind of like trying to redo that a bit. But it deviates a lot from the comics. It doesn't follow them slavishly. It does all quite different stuff in a really good way. But it's all of the cast from the movie. So it's all the same people.
Okay. Does that mean I unfortunately have to listen to Michael Cera?
You do, yes. But you also get to listen to Chris Evans and Jason Schwartzman.
I do get to listen to Chris Evans, which is good.
So that's good. But yeah, you're right. I mean, I think Edgar Wright is a great director, but whether he was right for that film, whether he was Edgar Wright for that film, I feel like maybe he was someone else, you know?
Did you watch his last movie, Edgar Wright, Last Night in Soho?
No.
I did not care for it.
I heard that was rather a self-indulgent thing.
Lots of people liked it.
Yeah.
I did not. The plot was terrible. The direction was all right, but like you said, it was very self-indulgent. And the script was poor as well, I think. It just didn't fit right. And it also felt, you know, as someone who spent a lot of time around the Soho area playing gigs and things like that, there used to be a big music scene back there, up there, which now I think is entirely dead because of COVID.
Yeah.
It did not feel like London or like Soho whatsoever. It felt incredibly fake, and that kind of jarred quite badly. So I did not like it whatsoever, but I know that some other people did. So maybe do give it a watch if you're interested.
I mean, that'd be low down on my list of things to watch.
It's not. I think it's possibly his weakest film.
Right.
Which is a shame because I've liked some of his other stuff. Obviously, Hot Fuzz and Shaun of the Dead are amazing.
Yeah, I really love Baby Driver, actually. I thought that was great.
And yeah, so I would like him to do something again. Do something good again, Edgar.
Yeah, do something, man. Get on with it. Last Night at Soho came out in 2021. What have you been doing?
Get on with it. What is he up to?
I'm sure he's working on something good.
He has set up a production company.
Boring.
With some people. Oh, Joe Cornish is involved.
Okay, that makes sense.
So Adam and Joe.
Yeah.
They're tackling an adaptation of Lockwood and Company. Oh, I think, did that get... did that get a release or not?
I don't think so.
Or is it just being worked on? The Murders of Molly Southbourne and The City of Brass, which I have heard of.
That sounds familiar.
Yeah, I've heard of those two before. So they're clearly working on some adaptations. I don't know if he is directing.
Yeah, book by S.A. Chakraborty. That's right. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. So this is
supposed to be really good.
Yeah, I've heard really good things about it. So we'll see if they're any good, if he's actually directing or if he's just producing. But yeah, we'll see.
Cool.
How the fuck did we get onto Edgar Wright?
Luke Wilson, Jason Schwartzman, Scott Pilgrim.
Yeah.
This time I remember the line, which is quite rare.
That is rare.
Even Jason Schwartzman couldn't have saved this film. I think he would have been marginally better, but it's a poorly written character, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not a good character at all. Not just missing the mark, but like from the off being a poorly designed character. Yeah. Anna Faris is in this, underutilized.
Yep.
I don't think there's an actor that I think is as underutilized as Anna Faris.
Yeah, like, that's probably true.
Like someone who genuinely is very, very funny and just never gets the opportunities to be funny in anything, either because she's a minor character that's not given enough time or is in something that's bad.
Yeah.
And you're just like, why? No. Give her more time. She's good. She's funny.
I mean, she was in Alvin and the Chipmunks of the Road Chip, which was the good one, wasn't it? Or was that the bad one?
No,
that was the good one with Tony Hale in it.
Yeah, that was the good one. the good one. Can't believe we have to refer to an Alvin and the Chipmunks movie as the good one. They were all bad. one was marginally better than the others.
So she's appeared in a few of our themed months because she was also in The Hot Chick as well.
Oh yes,
remember that film? That was give me some nightmares tonight.
Yeah, yeah. And what's the other one? Just Friends.
Oh yeah.
The cruelest, most mean-spirited movie of all time.
One of the most hateful films I've ever seen.
Just awful. Oh, she is going to be in a live-action animated film. A boy struggling to connect with anyone after the death of his father takes fascination with the everyday objects around him and envisions himself speaking to them, starring Carl Urban, Thomasin McKenzie, Jermaine Clement, and Anna Faris. That sounds very good. Oh, and it is directed by the guy who directed Gattaca.
Oh, well, there you go. What's it called?
It is called Eye Object.
Oh.
Interesting. Ah, I am excited for this film that I've only just heard about. That sounds good. That sounds very good.
There's no way that could be bad with that kind of cast.
Surely not. That's a load of good people, good director. Yeah.
Oh, they're filming it right now, so this won't come out for a while.
No, it will be a while, yeah. Be a while, yeah. Anyway, My Super Ex-Girlfriend. Anything else to say about My Super Ex-Girlfriend? What would you like to
say? I don't think so, really. There isn't that much to say, is there? It's got the She Hates Me by Puddle of Mud, but the clean version.
Oh, yeah.
They could have a flying sex scene, but they can't have anyone singing the word fuck.
Yep. Got some Muddle of Pud on here.
You can hear him going, she hates me. It's so cringe. It's so bad.
You know what's worse than that? The homophobia and transphobia in this movie.
Yeah.
Just casually thrown in here and there. And then they do is this a crying game surprise? Because I'm not into that.
Yeah.
That's awful. It's just like, what was the point of that? Did anybody actually laugh at that? You know?
No.
We're fellas, we're not gay. We promise you we're not gay. Toxic masculinity, masculine insecurity nonsense.
Yeah.
Just randomly in this movie that in general is just quite lighthearted about stuff.
But it was the same with that one last week with Ashton Kutcher, yeah. Wasn't it? There was loads of like random homophobia in that. And you're like, that is just how it was in the 2000s. And it wasn't that long ago, you know?
No,
like,
and it was shit then.
Yeah.
And it's double shit now.
Yeah. So yeah, if you are going to watch it, just be aware that, yeah, there are some parts of it that are quite unsavory.
Yeah.
But yeah. There is also a CGI shark, so.
One thing that I did like is that this is a movie that came from the era where they added websites to the movie to the end of the trailer. So if watch the trailer, it's got mysuperex.com.
Is that website still on? I'm going to type it in.
Have a look. Have a look and see if it's still there.
Privacy error. No.
No. I think it's still... or if you go through to it, then it's going to end up being...
I'm going to get a virus.
But it's, how... I love that era where it was just like, here's the website we've set up. And everyone was so excited about having websites for their films.
The World Wide Web.
Yeah. That's like, where the money's at.
I wonder if there was a DVD commentary on this.
Oh, there's got to have been. This was peak DVD commentary era, wasn't it? Surely.
Yeah.
2006. You get to hear the CGI shark talking about his acting.
Yeah. He's gone from this to, inspiring lots of good work in Sharknado further down the road.
Exactly. Oh, dear.
But he felt that Eagle versus Shark was very much a mockery of his talents. Shark, don't even get him started on Shark Tale.
We haven't talked about Eagle versus Shark, have we?
No, we haven't.
We should talk about that sometime as well. I know we say we should talk about that far too often, but we should.
Yeah, we should. But we're going to do Gattaca next, aren't we?
We are, yes.
I think that would be a good about turn. From
Something very different from the last two movies we've watched.
I don't think it has any random homophobia in it, but it's been a while.
So. Yeah, who knows? Maybe there is. So a bit of trivia for you. Filming only took 4 weeks.
Wow.
Yeah.
I can believe that.
I can also believe that.
Yeah, and then CGI in the shark probably took another 6.
Exactly. And Luke Wilson had a body double for his nude scene. So where you see his bum. That wasn't Luke Wilson.
Oh, yeah. Bum. Yeah. It was Jason Schwartzman.
Can you imagine if they had a pact where they're like, look, I need to do a nude scene where my bum's on show. We've got to just be each other's body doubles.
That would be hilarious.
Like, if you had someone who looked very similar to you, surely you would do that.
Yeah. Nobody looks like me, unfortunately. I'm
one of a kind. I think come on, Luke, show us your butt. Let's be honest here. Why did you have a body? Are you ashamed of your bum?
Yeah.
Have you got
Surely
like
there's a, nothing to be ashamed of?
Have you got a tattoo of Jason Schwartzman's face on one of your butt cheeks?
Maybe he does, and then maybe Jason Schwartzman's got the corresponding tattoo.
So Luke Wilson, left buttock, is Jason Schwartzman's face. Jason Schwartzman, right buttock, is Luke Wilson's face.
And what happens if they press them together?
they become like Station out of Bill and Ted and become the Uber Wilson Schwartzman.
No, I think it evolves into a sort of Akira situation. just buttock upon buttock upon buttock.
and then that mega buttock is in the next Wes Anderson.
The mega buttock. I could see that happening. I could see that being the title of a Wes Anderson film.
Yeah, it's one
apparently
of the stop,
his latest one of the about stop motions. The meteor chaser people in the desert. Apparently it was rubbish.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It's because he was just making a lesser Twister. That's all.
Yeah.
Remember Twister?
Yeah, yeah.
Great film.
That's sort of up similar to Volcano, isn't it?
Yeah, love a bit of Twister. I think there's romance in Twister, isn't there? We could is get there? Away with watching Twister.
There's probably a few tornado movies, surely. Was Twister the only one? Tornado movies of the 1990s.
There must be one of the Twisters. There must be one called Tornado.
There is, yep. 1996. Action thriller. Bruce Campbell, Ernie Hudson.
Does this
not look good?
Is this Tornado?
Yeah. An accountant sent to produce an evaluation of a tornado research project and the scientist running the project pursued tornadoes and each other.
That's like an
AI-generated idea for a film, isn't it?
I'm on board with this. This sounds amazing. I'll watch anything with Bruce Campbell and Ernie Hudson in.
That's a good pair.
Yeah, I love that it's got an exclamation mark at the end of the name.
Yeah, why not? It's the only way it's going to set it apart.
Not enough movies do that. Where's my super ex-girlfriend with an exclamation mark? Or my super exclamation mark ex-girlfriend, like Godspeed You Black Emperor.
Yeah. No, that's the just really, really highlights that the film Volcano didn't have that and therefore was rubbish.
It's rubbish because of it. Yeah, precisely. Anyway, have you got anything else you want to say about My Super Ex-Girlfriend?
No, it's fine. There's probably better stuff you could be watching. Yeah. But, you know, if you want something that's really, really not going to challenge your intellect and it's just going to be a bit of a kind of silly mid-2000s nostalgia hit with some okay acting and a few sort of gags that do land, then yeah, why not?
Yeah, that's kind of my thought as well. So how many beds does your super girlfriend break getting down and dirty out of 20?
Oh yeah, that's the gag, isn't it? Let's see, 9 beds. Is it even halfway there or is it more? I feel like it's around halfway there.
Maybe. Yeah, I'm going to go for 8 just because I found Luke Wilson so annoying. But it is nearly there. It's a suitable movie.
I'll go one more than you for the shark.
Yeah, for the shark, just, for the
just
love
for
of the
shark.
Shark.
Yeah,
exactly. Fab. Okay. So are we going to do Gattaca next?
Yeah, I think that'd be a good one.
Excellent. It's been years since I watched Gattaca.
Yeah, same here.
Of course, we should really be watching the entirety of the Beethoven TV series.
Yeah, well, if you can find it, then yeah, I'm down for that.
They also made an animated series of Free Willy.
Really?
Where?
I bet that was terrible as well.
Yes, I assume so. Oh man,
they used to make animated series.
They used to make animated movies out of anything. Anyway, Gattaca. We will do Gattaca next.
Yeah, and that will be good.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, thanks a lot for tuning in. You can find us on Twitter at Big Boys Don't Pod. You can email us bigboysdon'tcrypodcast@gmail.com. We'll be back next week to talk about Gattaca.
Alrighty. Bye-bye.
Bye.